Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And today, I get to share the story of Reviver. It is a digital license plate company that was founded by a gentleman here in the Sacramento region, and now it's beginning to take off. And I think you're gonna like the story. Neville Boston he is the founder, and he's brought along a lead investor, Steve Kircher, who is a good buddy of mine, actually brought me into the investment. And so we are, knock on wood, hoping that this thing is really going to take off. It's beginning to happen. And really, it's going to make going to the DMV potentially obsolete, which, hey, how can that not be a good thing, right? So stick around, my friends. Hear the story of Reviver. Yes, everything today is going digital, whether it be here at the workplace, in our homes, even our cars are going digital. Next thing you know, we're going to be having digital license plates. Actually, we do have that. Digital license plates are actually here, and that's what today's show is all about. We're going to be talking with Neville Boston. He is the CEO of Reviver.
CSO,
Chief Strategy Officer, founder, and he's going to share a little bit about this new business, and he's brought along with him Steve Kircher, my buddy. He is an advisor to Reviver. He's one of those people in the Sacramento community that has grown some substantial business, so we're going to hear a little bit about their background and dive into this this exciting business that's locating right here in the Sacramento region. So Neville, maybe you can give us a little bit of your background and tell us just a little bit about the company.
Sure. My background, I've always been in marketing, had a firm in Manhattan for several years. The idea around like this business and how it came to be, 2008, was going in a certain direction, had large clients with, you know, Pepsi and Microsoft and doing all these interesting things. And then the entire economy, you know, flatlined. And I was having dinner with a good friend of mine, and we were talking about like state-owned assets. He actually worked for the state. And we were talking back and forth about things that they have, because I wanted to get into a business that, regardless of what was going on with the economy, you had something that was actually connected, something that you had to do. And license plates, you know, kept popping up. But where it became relevant is that he had gone to the DMV a couple weeks earlier and had a horrible experience. And he was like,
"You're
man,
kidding me."
Oh, no. and that's the thing. It's like it's been a situation where you've done the same thing and it's been ineffective, but nobody had done anything about it. So the idea was like, hey, what if we had a digital plate that, you know, took care of compliance when it came to the vehicle, but you also didn't have to go to the DMV. You could do it over air with an app. Use apps to do your banking and everything else. Why wouldn't you do it the same thing with, you know, compliance on, you know, a secure network? So that was the idea. So we took that crazy idea and got a meeting with the legislative director for the DMV, a guy named Dennis Clear. And what we thought was going to be a 5-minute meeting ended up being an hour and a half, because the DMV was trying to get people out of their office and get people more online. So the timing just worked out. So what he did is he pointed us in the direction of getting in touch with his counterpart with the CHP, California Highway Patrol. And we walk into this meeting. There are 10 officers in the room, kind of looking around, you know, and we start talking about what we wanted to do. We hadn't built anything, but we, you know, had the idea kind of fleshed out. And what we got out of the meeting is when I knew that we actually had something. They said, thank you for not building something and trying to shove it down our throat. The fact that you talked to us and asked for our opinion, we're willing to open up our test track. You guys, when you build it out, you can test it anytime that you want, and we'll give you feedback. And what I learned that day is that if you bring people in, ask for their opinion, then they have ownership in what you're doing, and you have an opportunity to be successful. And then we started on the journey from that. So, you know, my background has been like, you know, marketing, you know, going out, helping to develop investment. But this was something completely different that ended up being, you know, tremendously exciting.
That's exciting stuff. Now, Steve, maybe you can give us a little bit of your background and then what attracted you to Reviver?
Well, Mark, as you know, since we've known each other for, I hate to even mention how many years.
It's been a while.
I've actually been involved in several operating businesses as far away as Shenzhen, China, making small form liquor crystal displays, which from 2000 to 2006, we ended up ramping revenues in that company from zero to a little over $300 million before we sold it to Flextronics in 2006. And I started a solar business up here in the Sacramento region called Solar Power Inc. Not necessarily a novel name, but that was a name. And
It worked.
And we had several marquee projects that we developed, including the Staples Center and the Golden One Center right here in Sacramento that were our projects, as well as at the time the biggest ground mount system in the state out at Aerojet in Rancho Cordova. Sold control of those companies and was going to, you know, retire. And a friend of mine had just made a major investment in Reviver, was explaining Reviver to me and asked me to get involved, join the board, make an investment. And I looked at the company and thought, if I was going to look at something else, this is it. It's a disruptive technology. It's got a big moat around in terms of IP protection around the business. It's got a market that is, you know, it's a worldwide market. There's 300 million registered cars in the United States of America. There's 40 million in the state of California. My personal belief is at some point in the next 4, 5, 6, 10 years, I don't know how long, every car will be digital because it's the only part of the car that you can utilize, that you can see and manipulate. And I hate to use the term manipulate, but you can. It's really a small display television set on the back of your car. So you can create not only just the registration, you can do parking, you'll be able to do toll pass, you'll be able to do everything that you do normally that's all over your car, just off your license plate. And when Neville talks about compliance, safety, security, it does all of that to provide, you know, safety that people are going to ride. When you start looking at all the new applications of riders that are in cars that are out there, whether it's Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, there's all these new vehicles that come in that are going to approach you, and you have no idea who's in the car, what they do, who they are. This can really help develop some new skill sets with regard to safety, security for people who are using it.
Well, you and I went out to dinner the other night, and as we walked out to your car, we looked at the back of the car, and it had a Reviver license plate on it, and you pulled out your phone, and you were very excited about the way that the phone connected to the license plate and so on. Maybe we could talk a little bit about this product, and you mentioned a number of areas, safety, security, obviously saving the DMV lines, but maybe we can dive into a little bit so our listener can sort of imagine what it might be like to have one of these license plates.
Yeah, so the plate, if you want to talk about the technology, we use an e-ink display. It's a bistable display. And a lot of times we have conversations with people and they say, hey, you know, we could just strap an iPad to the back of the car, it'll be fine. It's like, that sounds good, you know.
Strap an iPad to the back, okay. Yeah, is that, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not. And the reason why we use the particular display that we have is that the temperature variance, because that's one of the big issues that you have. You have something that's outside of the car and it's a screen, so it's going to heat up. So it's automotive grade. And it goes from negative 40 to 185 degrees Fahrenheit. And we've tested it basically all over the planet. And we've done 10-year regression tests to make sure that thing will hold up. So we have two products. We have the R-Plate and the R-Plate Pro. The R-Plate is the battery-operated product. Has a 10-year battery that's in the plate. With the use cases that we've developed, it usually lasts about 5 years. But you have the ability to have Bluetooth, so it syncs with your phone. So you're able to update it and change it
What would you update it for?
Registration.
Do?
So your registration renewal comes 75 days out, you get a text, you get an email, it tells you that your registration is due. You go into your Reviver app and it says, you know, redo your registration. You hit the button, it comes up, it shows you all of your fees. Once you look at it, it makes sense to you. You hit the second button, it pays for it. We connect with the DMV, you know, verify the information, update your plate.
It does that right now and eliminates you from having to go down to DMV.
Completely. So, and I mean, that's the beauty of having the technology. It's like, you know, that's how you do everything else.
So another big market application for this, when you think about, you know, just consumers like you and I, but then you start thinking about commercial fleets where they have trucks or cars that are at rental car companies, where their car might be in San Diego, though you rented it in San Jose today and the registration's due. So how do we find the car? How do we put a tag on it? So all of a sudden, you can do all of that over the air through Bluetooth automatically. It just makes your whole process that much more efficient. And that's what technology is built for. And it's not there today, and we've now brought it to the market.
So this eliminates those little stickers I've got to go put on the back of my car every year to say that I registered it. Somebody stole my license plate the other day off my truck. Would people want to try to steal a Reviver license plate because of the cool factor? And how tough would it be to steal? And how might it protect my car?
So that's actually a great use case because what we do with the plate is that you have a backing plate when you get a Reviver plate that actually goes on your vehicle before the actual plate tows in. And then we have safety fasteners in the front. So once you have the plate on, it's on there. You know, you could grab it, you try to tussle it, it's not going anywhere. Second thing is that if somebody was trying to take your plate, there's also in the back, like a magnet that if it goes, I think an eighth of an inch, it will show detached on the plate if you're trying to take it off, trying to rustle. So it says detached. So the person getting it sees that, you get a text message saying that your plate has been messed with, and you can check whether the plate is there or somebody was removing it for some maintenance or was somebody actually trying to steal it. And you can report it stolen. It shows stolen on the plate.
Yeah. So, and they're not going to put it on the back of their car if it says stolen.
Correct. Correct. And I mean, and it's so much easier to take off a metal plate. All you need is a screwdriver in about 30 seconds. So there is a reason why it wouldn't make sense for you to mess with the plate.
Okay.
And the same is actually true with stickers. I mean, there are people that go around and peel the sticker off your plate and put it on their plate because it shows renewed. You can't do that with a digital plate.
Well, okay, so there's a hassle factor. There's obviously securing your vehicle. You brought up safety. So how would it help driver safety or the safety of the automobile?
So a couple different ways. If you look at, you know, having a teenager that's in the house, you're letting them borrow the car. On our app, you know, on our platform, you have the ability to kind of geofence that area. So if your child is driving the car, you'll know where they're going because you can set a geofence. And if they go outside of it, you can get, you know, they can let you know. In addition to speed, like if you're speeding outside of that, you would also get information on that. So from, you know, when you think about young people and being on the road and not being familiar with the road like they should be, and, you know, sometimes being careless, it's a way that you can make sure that, you know, your kids, they understand and know that, hey, I can see what's going on and I'm doing it for your protection.
So it can do that right now.
It can it's got that built right in now. It has that.
I'm surprised nobody's put that into a vehicle yet, you know, in some other part of the car. Is there anybody else doing that?
Well, you have Life360 that does it on a phone app, but nobody's doing it tied to a vehicle. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, because you can, you know, decide to leave your phone conveniently, you know, when you're not, you know, when you're doing what you're not supposed to. You can't do that with your plate because you have to have your plate for compliance.
Okay, so I have to imagine that there might be somebody out there listening thinking, I don't want anybody knowing how fast I'm going. I'm not a child anymore. I'm an adult, and I don't want Big Brother knowing how fast I'm driving.
Right.
Have you ever had that come up yet?
Well, this is the thing. One of the things that we're really concerned about is privacy. And we wanted to make sure, you know, you had GDPR come out and, you know, CCPA when it comes to how you deal with people's privacy, their data, that kind of thing. And we've built in and made sure that we have support for that. The person who has the plate, and it's an R-Plate Pro that has the GPS in it, you can actually shut off the GPS or turn it back on. So you have control over that. So, but if the kids were driving it, the parents would have the control because it's their plate. But you have an app. So if you don't want somebody to know where you're going, you can shut that off. So you have that ability. And that was important to us to make sure that we were in compliance when it came to GDPR and then CCPA, when it came to your information and how that's being utilized.
Okay. So you've got convenience, streamlining the DMV process.
Right.
You've got the compliance. What about like on the maintenance and things like that of the vehicle? Are there things that it would notify me as far as what I might need to do to my vehicle so that maybe if I'm stuck on the side of the road, it can notify people?
Yeah, we just formalized a partnership with, I believe, Safeguard, and we're going to be adding that feature to it. So that will be out here probably within the next month. So you'll be able to have that feature. When it comes to information about the vehicle, that's actually something we're working on for some of our fleet customers to be able to add that functionality. So if you have a fleet and you actually have to check out a truck, you know, to do your work, knowing that there's oil change that's coming up or something like that, we can actually add those features in and be able to support you knowing what's going on with that vehicle.
People are talking about autonomous driving now a lot. We're even seeing some of that in newer cars. Is this license plate complementary to the autonomous 100%. Vehicle? How would they work together?
So what's happening with autonomous vehicles is there isn't a standard that's set up on how information is being disseminated. How do you know when it's in kind of autonomous driving mode? as opposed to somebody actually, you know, operating it. And I think through the plate, you can actually set up cues that would let somebody on the outside know, you know, how that the vehicle is actually in what mode it's in. And those are things that, you know, we've looked at, had initial conversations about, but can completely be a part of, you know, transitioning into autonomous. Now, one of the things that's kind of a pet peeve of mine is that autonomous driving and vehicles, that all makes sense. Until we actually invest in the infrastructure, that's going to be, you know, 5-10 years out.
Okay.
Because you got to fix the roads in order to be able to know that they can drive safely on them. But as far as being able to connect into the vehicles and then show compliance in a way, or be able to give information to people on the outside that are seeing it, we're completely in sync with that.
Okay. And then there's, I want to, you know, I'm going to move off the product, or the product feature set, but it's, to me, it's intriguing because it's such a unique, yeah.
One more comment to the product feature set, because one of the things that you get really excited about is, as we said, this is the only connected plate to the, or connected connectivity to the car that is visible that you can see. So we are actually have run proof of concept in Dubai, who's going to actually place an order fairly quickly, for several reasons, because they can actually mandate these plates in these, you know, different regions, and that's their intent. But one of their challenges has been they can. All this technology that we're talking about, a lot of it's already inside the car, but people that are inside the car can cut the cord, so to speak. So you still can't track them, geofence them, or any of that kind of stuff. The plate will automatically show that. And when we talk about that, I think about the prevalence of electric vehicles and how electric vehicles are starting to really make great strides in this country, which I think is terrific. Electric vehicles right now, there's no very good way to tax an electric vehicle for their road usage, similar to, you know, when you go to the gas station down in the state of California, half of the money you pay for your gas is going to the road tax. Mm-hmm. It's tax. So I really think there's going to be some point in the future a vehicle miles driven tax replacement.
Okay.
This is the way you measure it, because if you could measure it today inside the car, but then there's a trust factor. But if you measure it through the car and how far it's driving through the plate, nobody, if they try and tamper with it, you'll know that.
Yeah.
So it's a really efficient way to handle vehicle miles driven as a tax, which I think helps all the states in the country in terms of keeping infrastructure and money in roads. People who use the roads are not going to pay for the roads.
Wow. How soon is this going to be mandated? I mean, it sounds like Dubai is taking a leadership effort on this, but I mean, why isn't California looking at this?
Well, they are.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's looking at vehicle miles driven and how to do that. Nobody's quite there yet in saying, okay, this is what we're going to do. And I don't know in this country whether, you know, we're a different country. I don't know that we'll mandate you have to have a digital license plate. But you can sure make it, you could for electric vehicles, you could for some specific reason. We'll see. But I think the applications that you're going to see with this plate, we can't even imagine them right now for 5 years, 10 years down the road.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And to add to that, we want to look at our product kind of like Apple does. You build something that's interconnected, that shows value, and people choose to buy it because there's a benefit for it. And you start working with DMVs and Department of Transportation across the country to actually link their systems so that, you know, you actually set up, you know, a how things are done as far as compliance and make it digital. So think about digital registration, but also think about titling. Think about the ability to actually buy and sell cars through a secure network. These are the things that you can do when you are connected across the country. And those are the things that we're looking to do from a technology standpoint, but also a compliance standpoint in a place that hasn't had any innovation in decades. So this is very, very unique, very different, but really game-changing.
You think about all the paperwork. If you go down to buy a new car, there's a lot of paperwork. Yeah. Think about the number of trees that we're going to save, the way that it would help the environment. It sounds like it would be like a no-brainer type thing. Right?
Absolutely. And that's what we've been doing. We've been really working hard, not just here in California, but across the country, on changing the perception of why this needs to be, you know, important, and why we need to make these strides and changes. In a crazy way, COVID was a boon for our business because, one, it allowed us to actually move from Foster City down in the valley up to the Sacramento region. It saved the company a couple million dollars just for making the move. We've been able to almost double the amount of employees, and we're hiring people all around here. But more than that, what it did for fleets and other companies, it showed like, hey, when the DMV closed down, these guys could still transact business. And it was like, wow, this is something that's really revolutionary. It's something that we actually need. Because until it happened, everybody was stuck in like, you've got to do it this way. You've got to move this paperwork from here to here. But when you couldn't do that anymore, you know, they started to open up and say, hey, a digital platform is important. But we've been working on this for a decade. So it actually, it led to the work that we had put in before.
Incredible. Okay, so let's move to your business then. We're talking about the customer and going to market and how these how as business people, you're trying to figure out how to grow the business and penetrate the market. Can you give us a little bit of overview of what the marketing and sales efforts are and how's it going?
Yeah, so we have four kind of sectors that we're kind of focused on. You know, consumer is one that we do. We're not actively, you know, really putting out marketing yet, but we've brought on two marketing companies to actually help us do that, because that is actually the most important thing that we need to do from a company perspective, is actually raise our awareness. People don't even know we're here. They don't know we exist. There's probably 3 million people in California that would buy our plates today if they actually knew about it. So it's about awareness. So that's one of the things. So we have a consumer pipeline that we're working on. We have, you know, kind of a business pipeline that we work kind of a B2B to C, which would be the dealerships.
Okay.
So here, you know, like the Future Group, you know, Steve Plo's, you know, group, you know, they're one of our customers. So we'll go into dealerships, we'll preload the plates on vehicles, and they'd be sold with the vehicle.
Okay.
So that's one way that
we're
doing
it. So that's a channel partner.
That's a channel partner that we're working with. And then in addition to that, you know, you have fleets. You know, City of Sacramento is a customer. So is the City of Oakland. But, you know, we have, you know, bigger partners that we're working with that we are putting plates on their vehicles so they can actually track where they're going, you know, back and forth. So that's another one. And then working with, you know, state governments, what we're going to be doing with Dubai to be able to expand that. Those are also things that we're looking at. And one of the ones that have come up recently is also rental vehicles. Huge opportunity with being able to actually shape and change that market. Again, paperwork heavy, bogged down with unnecessary, you know, tedious work that can actually be digitized and, you know, kind of help to open up and, you know, drive adoption.
From a sales strategy, and you look at this particular business, we're in a regulated business, and that can be good news and it can be bad news, because obviously generally when you're in a regulated business, it takes a lot more time and energy to get your product through in the market. And in this case, I would say that I like to use the term gatekeepers. There's 50 gatekeepers to get into the whole market, and those are the respective DMVs in each state. You can't go down to Raley's and buy a license plate and put it on your car. It's just not going to happen. So as we continue to expand or get through every state's regulatory challenges or issues, and there's quite a few states where we're approved in and we can get to more of the market, California's always been the leader and will continue to be the leader in both technology and we think with digital plates, people are looking at California right now for, you know, what are you guys doing and how are you doing it? So as we sell into, whether it's a dealership model, whether it's a car rental model, and all of a sudden Illinois opens up, those same customers we're selling to are in Illinois. So your sales, as we expand in our states, grow exponentially. That's really exciting for us because that allows us to hit the market. So we want to set a great solid base of sales here in the state. We're active, very active in California, very active in Arizona. Get those two states really moving, and then really these things will all expand. Just, you know, they should by themselves, but obviously they need a little push into all these other states, and you'll see sales grow exponentially. And it's exciting. We could be one, or should be, to be quite honest. I looked at this, should be the biggest company in the Sacramento region. We're excited about that. We should be one of the biggest employers, and we're going to be one of the biggest in revenue, and we're going to be a big contributor to the state of California.
Yeah. So if I'm out there listening now, and I'm building a business, right? We're talking to a few other entrepreneurs maybe sitting here going, okay, early stage company, you've got these different constituencies you've got to grow, right? You've got the dealerships, you got the DMVs around the nation, you've got the end users, and I think there might have been one more. How do you decide the allocation of resources? I mean, whether to go all in with the, you know, how much of your resources go to the consumer? How much of it go to adding dealerships and keeping the dealerships happy? How many go to setting up another state?
Okay, so that's an excellent question. Right now, I would say the fastest way for us to grow is through the dealership market right now, just because of the cost of acquisition in some of those other places, especially consumer. It's extremely high because of the name recognition. So like I was saying, we brought on two agencies to kind of help with our profile locally. We're working with Runyon Saltzman to help, you know, kind of build that out, you know, and get our awareness, you know, down in the Sacramento region so that people know who we are. And then also talk to the legislators and the other folks that, you know, would help to, you know, move things along for us. And then we brought on an agency, 1035, that's going to help with our national branding so that we're able to raise that profile so people know about us. And then we're going to be working with some influencers, both micro and larger ones, to help kind of get the word out about the company, what we're doing, what we're about. That I think is going to be really important. So once those things happen, I think consumer will start to light up and be kind of a really good partner to kind of go after. But right now, dealerships are kind of the bread and butter. There's 1,200 dealerships in California. There's probably 2.5 million new vehicles that are sold here, probably three times that in used vehicles. So there's a huge opportunity just in California to do that. And then fleets, it's a natural thing when you have a product that solves a problem. When you think about businesses, and Steve was saying this earlier, you've got vehicles all over the place. And, you know, how do you connect them? How do you update them? Like, you have three or four different addresses. If you send it to the wrong address, the tags never get to the vehicle. But all of a sudden, you can go to your computer, you can look at where your vehicles are, and you can update it remotely. So it's a game changer on how you do it. So when you start thinking about, you know, kind of allocation of resources, I would say dealerships, we're putting a lot of energy into that. I think we're going to start shifting a little bit to fleets to be able to, you know, kind of address that market. One of the things that we also need to do is get out to new states, because each new state, like Steve was saying, is a new addressable market. So how things are looking like right now is that by the end of this year, we'll be in about 34% of the U.S. With the states that we're going into. So we're currently in California and Arizona selling. We have full authorization in Michigan, Illinois, and Georgia. Texas for commercial fleets, which is about 9 million vehicles. And then we're also working in Maryland, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and North Carolina. So all of those things are in process. By the end of 2022, we should be in 50% of the country, which will give us access to over 140 million vehicles. So those are the ways that we can grow. And we're going to be allocating, you know, resources to be able to build out that platform. And then, you know, kind of go after the other markets that we're looking at. So that's kind of where we are right now.
When you look at that, because when you talk about resources, you talk about capital stack in the company and where are we with cash, and you know, we're currently burning cash. We've decreased by moving to Sacramento and relocating headquarters, consolidating everybody into this region has really helped us conserve cash. We're focused on, you know, how do we get to a cash flow positive model? At the same time, what we don't want to do is be, you know, penny wise and pound foolish. So we're looking at trying to expand the capital base. And we're fairly confident that we'll be able to bring, now that we are actually in the market, real capital into the business. So, it, you know, with a $20, $30, $40 million raise somewhere between now and the end of the year, you can actually exponentially grow those revenues and grow those sales by focusing your resources now on sales. Up until today, this company has spent so much money just getting through the regulatory hurdles, trying to get the product developed, there's just so many ways that it's spent money, some efficiently, some not so efficiently. But now we're here. And terrific management team, terrific products. We can prove the market. We've actually now have revenues this year. You know, our revenues will be up at least tenfold from where they were a year ago. In a significant number, they'll be in the multi-millions, which will be great. And then next year, that goes even greater as we continue to launch states and dealerships. So to attract the right capital, and that could be from various, there's all kinds of new ways to raise capital today. So from looking from even a quick start with a crowdfunding program, IPOs are obviously still traditional, but out there, and we have, I think, a great story to tell as we continue to add the revenues. And we have two VC investors that are very active in the company. One up here is Moneta Ventures, who recently invested and really wants to take us into the VC market and help us get that quick, $20 to $30 million to get us under our belt and then drive us to the IPO. So those are kind of the strategies for capital stack. But we want to spend the money on revenue. Let's go attract market share.
Grow your way through this. So maybe just from an educational standpoint, you talk about burning cash. You reduce the burn. You've built some significant companies, Steve. When you think about that situation where you're burning cash, you've got a certain amount of runway, and then you're going to go raise some more money. How do you sort of, maybe for the listener out there, how do you rationalize those decisions to make sure you don't run out of money?
Well, you always have to understand where your next, you know, where you can go to get money if you need to get money. You also have to understand where you can cut if you need to cut. And those are balancing items all the time. And so you try and always have, you know, 3 to 6 to 7 months of burn in your bank account, which gives you the flexibility to then go out and go to the capital markets. But you also, when you go to the capital markets, you've got to be able to show, I mean, why is somebody going to invest in you? You have to show catalysts. Here's where our growth is. Here's this catalyst that's going to drive this valuation to get us from here to there. In this case, what's really fascinating to me about Reviver is it's its own market. So we can help drive whatever the expectations are, because there's nobody that you can look and say there's a comp. So, you know, COVID was great for people to see, hey, I can do registration digitally. I don't have to put a mask on, go to the DMV for the 2 hours they're open and do all that. At the same time, and you're seeing it today, when you look at the automobile dealers, on our budget, we're in as many automobile dealerships as we have budgeted, and we're growing in the dealership market. Those dealerships, though, are selling 25% of the cars they were selling because they don't have inventory.
Right.
So it's kind of a chicken and egg, and they don't have inventory because of COVID, and their manufacturing plants were shut down, and there's a chip shortage, which I'm sure everybody's aware of. Those things, the inventory will work its way through. So our objective now is to get as many dealerships signed onto the program as we can, so that when we get through this inventory glut, you'll see those revenues continue to drive. So investors will understand that.
Okay, walk us through the thought process on raising money, right? This is something that's on the horizon. So whether to do crowdfunding, partner with venture capital, and then ultimately go public. Steve, you've taken companies public, but how do you think through this process and timing? Because right now that we all know there's a lot of money on the sidelines, how do you strike while the iron's hot?
And this is we have terrific board discussions about that, as you can imagine, because we do have, you know, two venture capitalists on the board who've put in money, and they truly understand the VC market. I'm much more of a public market guy, and I've done that a couple of times. I would make an argument. My defense is always the more shareholders you have in this company, they're all going to say, hey, I invest in this company, it's a digital license plate company, and it spreads the word more rather than keeping it close.
Especially on a consumer product like this. 100%. Everybody's like, oh, that's
100%.
Cool.
That's
you see on CNBC over there, and it's like, oh, it's free advertising.
That's kind of my thought. But you'll find a lot of private equity guys and VC guys who are going to say, let's keep raising, you know, Series B, Series C, Series D, Series E, and we'll grow this where we come out at a multi-billion dollar cap when we come out and do an IPO. Because there's always, everybody has some form of liquidity event in the back of their mind. I really like, again, I'm just the little guy in the room. I like the fact that we could maybe allow people, which is why I like crowdfunding, to be honest with you. I like the fact that you could let somebody come in and invest in this company, which I do think and do firmly believe has disruptive technology, at a very low entry point, so that they can get the benefit of the run-up in the world, and every retail investor can get the benefit of the run-up rather than having it being held in 3, 4, 5 hands. So I like that. Now, and that's where you see where crowdfunding came from, or where Robin Hood's came from, mm-hmm. or some of those guys. Right. Where we end up is good. We're going to make those decisions here in the next month and a half, 2 months, and we'll see how that plays through.
And to piggyback on what Steve's saying, what we're going to do is that we're going to run all of these scenarios in parallel. There'll be a parallel when it comes to, potentially going down the VC path for that money. There'll be a parallel for the Reg CF because that's something that we need
to do.
That's
the crowdfunding.
And then, looking at the IPO, it's all going to be done in parallel because it's all important. And that way we're at a position where we don't say we wished we had, taken this further or we had explored this. So we can just see what actually makes the most sense and what's in front of us. That way we've hedged our bets and we're making the best decision for the company and for the investors.
What's interesting about Reg CF and the new rules that the SEC has passed, up until I think it's the middle of March, a crowdfunding platform was limited to $1 million. That really doesn't, move the needle for us much one way or the other, mm-hmm. So it's not really worth the time or effort. They've now raised the cap on crowdfunding platforms to $5 million. That's a good, that helps. That's a decent sized number to go after, and let all the retail or, consumers around the country buy in for $100, $200, $500 and get a part mm-hmm. of, to be a part of this growth and tell all their friends. That to me, that's kind of fun. That'd be the fun part. Reg A Plus is also another route to go. And they've moved the cap there to $25 million on Reg A Plus offerings. So there's so many different avenues for capital raising today. And if you can, if you've got the right story, the right message, and the right, you know, kind of excitement around your company, it's marketing your securities is just like marketing your license plates.
Yeah, it's interesting, Steve. You were you guys have brought up our region, the Sacramento region, a few times on the show. I talk about it every day, relentlessly. But you were kind enough, Steve, to circle up your friends here in the region and say, hey, I would love to have Sacramentans and my friends have an opportunity to invest. And I think a lot of people don't know how to get into early stage investing. You know, they think about the stock market, right? They think about the public markets. They don't think about these early stage investments, which is kind of where I live. That's my world. But most people don't think that, but you were kind enough to do that and bring in Sacramentans to invest into Sacramento opportunity. That's cool. And so there's a part of me that sort of hopes that you do the crowdfunding thing so more people have a chance, right? So they don't have to wait for the IPO, and then they can't even get in on the IPO because they don't have the relationship with their broker, and they ended up having to buy it way after it's had its run-up. So any thoughts about like just democratizing the opportunity to invest in these high-flying companies?
Well, clearly that's my passion and my love and why I've come back out. I think that that's a... the time's come. I mean, when I was involved in raising all this capital, you couldn't do that in 2000 and 2005 and even 2010. The regulations prohibited that and didn't allow it. Now, and Mark, we talked about this, the recent one where I reached out to some friends and said, you ought to take a look at this. You had to be an accredited investor by the definition in order to invest in the round that we did. And that precludes a lot of people, and there's a lot of paperwork, and there's a ton of things that go into that. Significantly different from, and they've really streamlined, the SEC's really streamlined the paperwork process for, whether it's crowdfunding or Reg A Pluses or all of that. And it makes those kind of opportunities available. What you want to make sure, from my perspective as a fiduciary, is that what you're offering, you believe in, and you don't want everybody to go out and say, oh, let's go get $5 million for some harebrained idea that has nothing significant behind it. That's why I love Reviver. I mean, there's been close to $60 million invested in building this product up from Neville's brain to where it is today, where we've got products on the street. That's a significant investment. And so people are buying a Reviver, whether it's in a crowdfunding, or buying into that, not only just a dream, but into that investment. There's product out there. That's where your diligence comes in, and where you got to know who the guys are that are doing it.
Okay, so I'll go with about two more questions, and then maybe you can each grab onto these. Steve, you talked about how big this company might be. Could be the biggest company in Sacramento. It's got that kind of upside. Paint that picture. I'm sort of the dreamer around here. What could it look like?
So what we didn't talk about is the revenue model. So we're not just selling license plates. If we could, we would give everybody in the country a license plate. We're selling the connectivity. And so the connectivity to the license plate is a SaaS business model, subscription as a service business model. And it's roughly, call it $5 a month for the Reviver plate. So that's, $60 a year, and you get all of this connectivity in the plate. You get the compliance, you get the safety, you get the security, you get tolling, you get all of that for $5 a month. When you talk about a total available market at... call it 300 million plates, mm-hmm. Multiply 300 million times $5, you've got a billion. I mean, if you had 100% penetration, those are billions of dollars of revenue monthly and annually that you mm-hmm. can get to. Just 10 million plates in the state of California takes it to $50 million a month in revenue, $600 million a year. 10 million is 25% of the state. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of opportunities that are out there if we can execute on the sales side. And those are, and when you look at this is a very complicated company, which is why it's cost so much money to get here. Not only is it regulated, but it's a hardware product, and you don't really want to invest, nobody wants to invest in hardware, because all hardware does is go down, right?
Right.
No matter what product you're making. And I lived in that industry where we had, maintain margin in a hardware space. We were growing revenue, maintaining margin, and it was very complicated business.
Right.
This is somewhat similar. I might argue that 5 years from now, there won't be a license plate on the back of your car, and that the OEMs will be building the plates right into the trunk or right into the bumper. They would license that from us. because that's the technology we have. So the hardware component may not be long. The licensing and the software component will be there forever. And that's where your markets come. And when you get up into that, you know, $50 million, $100 million, $200 million a month business and start putting multiples on those in the marketplace, this becomes a major, major, major company.
Yeah. Okay, so closing thoughts around the vision and advice to the next person in line. I think that's an interesting thing. So you have battled this, Neville, and you are getting over the hump, if you will. Maybe it's more than getting over the hump. Any advice to the next person in line that's battling to figure out how to build a business like this or any other business?
You know, something that's a great question, and I always look at it like this. The day I took my first dollar, I was 100% in. And I promised myself that I would never stop until this was successful based on the money that was taken. Mm-hmm. So when I think about success in business, the only time you fail is when you quit. So if you're willing to sell out, kind of burn the boat, and have to figure out how you get back, then you will win. And I think that's what it's about.
I love that. But I don't know if that's the trending theme in our society is don't quit.
Well, I mean,
it's okay to fail. I thought it was okay to fail.
That's why you invest with Neville. That's another significant reason why you invest is he's stuck out through some pretty difficult times in here. And you know, that's an incredible trait. When you take somebody else's money, you want to lose all your money before you lose somebody else's money. And that's a great trait. And you look for that. Always look for that.
Yeah, I mean, because when you think about entrepreneurship, I mean, it's something that's always been intrinsic to me based on my family background. My parents are first generation here from Guyana, you know, immigrants to this country, you know, in the early 70s. And, you know, all my, you know, my dad's siblings had a business of some kind. So this was in my blood. So, this is something that's exciting for me and something that I was always about. But when I think about the investment and the time and the idea behind it and be willing to kind of stick your neck out and, you know, and take all the arrows, and learning to raise money, because I'd never raised money at this level until starting this company. But I believed in it, and I had people believe in me with only a deck, not any product. So knowing that and being a part of that, you realize, like, listen, if you just stick it out, you'll get to the other side. And it was because of the meetings that I had, and I saw that there was an actual real need, that you were solving a real problem. It wasn't something like, oh, I built an app, you know, that, you know, does emojis and, you know, that's cute and whatnot. But it's actually something that I think will change how the world interacts with their vehicles and how they interact with their plates. And this platform, like Steve was saying, will be here forever. Because whether it's a digital plate or it's built in or it's something, some other embodiment of it, you're still going to need to connect, and that platform is still going to be valuable. So for any entrepreneur, I say that if you really believe in what you're doing and you stick it out, you'll always find success.
Neville Boston, Steve Kircher. If you don't love these guys, you don't love entrepreneurship. Great story of Reviver. Look forward to seeing this growth and seeing what Reviver becomes. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. And great show today about a digital license plate company that's being started here in Sacramento. They've got relationships with other states around the country, including California, and will make it easier, maybe even eliminate some of us going to the DMV, right? So think about that, if you will. Entrepreneurs solve the world's biggest problems, the pain in the butt that it can be to go down to the Department of Motor Vehicles. We know what that's like, and it ain't fun. And, you know, you just think about that. Entrepreneurs, they are amazing when it comes to creativity and bringing technology and innovation to industry. And that's what the beauty of entrepreneurship is, in my mind, people taking risk, making sacrifices, figuring out a way to change the world. And so that's why I love my role as a podcaster and doing events in the entrepreneurial community and as an investor into the startup community. It's a blast being around these ambitious, innovative thinking people. So if you want to get involved with me, with Haney Biz, The Growth Factory, our newest accelerator / VC fund, if you want to be around the folks that are figuring out a way to change the world, live vicariously through Neville Boston and people like that, hit me up. I want to know you. I want to meet you. Maybe you even have a startup that you think is a scale or that is a scalable business. I need to know you. So hit me up on social media at the Mark Haney. Or of course, you know, I want to know you personally too. And that's the beauty of doing business relentlessly local. You can come down to my office here in Rockland, visit me, and we can sit down, have a cold beverage or a cup of coffee and figure out a way to help you change the world as well. So to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and those fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life, into the 13 stripes, into the 50 stars, into that one American dream, always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.